Thanks, Jerry. Joe, we will see you guys bright and early tomorrow. As Blue Jays try to tie up this series right now, we throw the phone lines open at 416-870-0590, *590 on the cell. Long distance is 1-888-666-0590. It is hard not to get caught up in the incredibly poor call made by home plate umpire Mike Everett in the bottom of the ninth with two out on and two on Michael Saunders. The 2-1 pitch that was 5.5 inches low was called a strike. So instead of 3-1, it's 2-2. Saunders can't let the next pitch that's down go by. He strikes out on the next pitch, and the Blue Jays lose 2-1. But the Blue Jays did only get 4 hits tonight, and that was not Mike Everett's fault. James Paxton, Edwin Diaz were incredible. Steve Cishek with one of the ugliest shutout innings ever, one of the worst 3 strikeouts. He was all over the place, but made big pitches when he had to, and the Blue Jays open up this homestand with a loss. 416-870-0590, *590 on the cell. Long distance is 1-888-666-0590. And let's get right to it. Andre is in Scarborough. Hey, Andre.
Hey, Mike. I called in about a few weeks ago and said, you know, about this season being a roller coaster. And yeah, we've still been playing really well. I still think that's what it's going to come down to at the end. But a lot of the talk lately about how they just need to do something at the trade deadline. So I won't be comfortable. I think I'll be okay even if we don't really do that much. Just wanted to get your thoughts.
Well, I think they clearly need some help. I think they need to improve the starting pitching, especially with Aaron Sanchez bound for the bullpen. No matter how many times people want to suggest it's not going to happen, it's going to happen. So they're going to need to add some starting pitching, even if Drew Hutchison just comes up and steps seamlessly into the 5 spot in the rotation and he's fine. You still have zero depth when it tends to be when and not if somebody gets hurt. So I do think they need to go outside the organization and bring in some starting pitching. I don't know that they really need to do anything else, but, you know, any addition would be helpful, obviously. Any addition that helps the team is helpful. So I don't think they'll sit on their hands. I think they understand how good this team is and how good a chance it has, and if you can tweak it here and there to make it even better, why not?
Fair enough, man. I just want to say quickly, I just feel bad for Sanchez because, like the rest of the team, we need to enjoy what we're seeing right now and not worry about the end of the season or next year. Let management do that. And what we have right now is a really good team. I'm not worried about tonight. I'm pretty sure it'd be an interesting stat to see how many runs we score after a game where we only get 1 run or get shut out.
How much? Yeah, you're going to have to do the heavy lifting on that one.
Yeah, maybe I'll get back to you on Twitter if I figure that out.
All right, let me know. Thanks, Andre. Appreciate the call. 2-1 Blue Jays lose to the Seattle Mariners. James Paxton from Ladner, B.C., former first-round pick of the Blue Jays and one they couldn't sign, winds up coming home, or at least coming to his home country, and really getting the job done. He was outstanding tonight. Leo is in Waterloo. Hey, Leo.
Hey, Mr. Wilner. Yeah, you're just kind of nailing the you're putting the hammer down on the head here with the nail with Paxton. Like he did an excellent job. Not that there haven't been other pitchers that have done the same thing to us, but it was nice to see that Estrada came back. He got off to an early. It was early, tough going, but he straightened it out, and he certainly gave us a chance to win. But good to see him back and that happened for him. But with that second pitch to Tulo in the ninth.
Saunders.
Or Saunders, sorry, yeah. With that happening, like I don't get how the umpire can call something that was, and me and a couple of buddies were looking at it, and we played it back a few times. We did it in slow-mo, and that thing was way down low. There was no reason for calling it a strike. So the question is to you that I'm going to throw is pretty much everything like players and team managers, everybody has somebody to answer to. Who do umpires have to answer to when things start going awry with bad calls? And just because an argument was made a couple innings before with Donaldson on that lousy pitch, it was called a strike.
And wasn't as bad on Donaldson, but yeah.
Okay, well, sorry, what's that?
No, the call on Donaldson wasn't as bad. It wasn't as egregious as the call on Saunders. But, yeah, Donaldson had a beef. What's supposed
did,
to happen is...
He let it go, and then the ump kept on carrying it on. That's when Gibby came out, right? So
yeah.
I kind of take it as the umpires are here to control the game and not to escalate things. And this didn't happen again tonight. And we had an experience with a couple of umpires. I'm not going to mention any names. And also last year, too. Who are umpires, or is there a forum for umpires to have to answer to when these kinds of things happen? Because I think it's starting to get a little carried away. What do you think?
I don't know that it's starting to get a little carried away. I think it's always been bad. But the problem is that the people that the umpires answer to are umpires. That, you know, there are umpire supervisors, and apparently they go over the calls and they go over the ball strikes and, you know, all of that stuff. But they're former umpires. And for me, at least, I've always believed, and the evidence has always pointed towards the fact that there is a siege mentality among umpires. It becomes us versus them. It's baseball's version of the blue wall, if you will, that, you know, they believe that players and managers are whining all the time and they don't know how tough this job is, and we get way more of the calls right than we get wrong, and give us a break. And it kind of leads to this sort of adversarial relationship that we see when things start to go sideways. And I don't know this for a fact, but I have a feeling that if Mike Everett, who is a veteran umpire and a crew chief and who has been doing this a long, long, long time, if Mike Everett was to talk to an umpire supervisor after this game, the umpire supervisor would say, you know what? You got 94% of the calls right tonight, which is great. You did a good job. You didn't back down on Donaldson. And the Saunders thing was a bad call, but it happens. And instead of saying, look, you need to understand. And I know that they're human beings, and because they're human beings, they're not going to be perfect. But they know when they've really blown one. And you got to let a hitter let off some steam when you've really blown a call. And you used the word escalate, and that's exactly what Mike Everett did. He escalated the situation with Josh Donaldson, and this is exactly what umpires should be told every time that happens not to do. Your job as an umpire is to walk away. Walk away. It's not to chase. It's not to walk up to a batter who's standing in the box and put your face in his ear to say your piece. It's not to run after a guy who's walking away like we saw Vic Carapazza do. It is to de-escalate the situation, walk away, and come back when the hitter has calmed down, and off we go. Thanks for the call. We will continue to take your calls all the way to the bottom of the hour. The phone lines are open at 416-870-0590, star 590 on the cell, and long distance, 1-888-666-0590. To the bottom of the hour on our flagship, across the network, and then we'll keep it on our flagship Sportsnet 590, The Fan, and sportsnet.ca/590 until 11 o'clock Eastern time. Blue Jays lose 2-1 to the Seattle Mariners. We'll hear from the skipper when we come back. It's Blue Jays Talk on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Welcome back to Blue Jays Talk. A tough one for the Jays as they come home off that five-game road trip and their three-game win streak comes to an end. They lose 2-1 to the Seattle Mariners, thoroughly dominated by James Paxton. It was fantastic tonight. The Ladner, British Columbia native, while upsetting Blue Jays fans, certainly gave a thrill to Baseball Canada fans, because it looks like this guy is going to be something for the national team in future World Baseball Classics, which will be terrific. Not tonight, though, as the Blue Jays lose it 2-1 to the Seattle Mariners. I'm Mike Wilner taking your calls, but before we get back to the phones, let's hear from the skipper. Here's what John Gibbons had to say in the wake of tonight's 2-1 loss.
John, certainly not the end result that you wanted, but you have to have been pretty pleased with the way Marco pitched tonight.
Yeah, Hazel, I really was. You know, I thought he looked a little bit rusty early. You know, he's a really pinpoint control guy, and then he elevates it when he wants to. But I thought as the game went on, you know, he settled in and did a nice job. But, you know, Paxton was great tonight. I mean, you know, great arm. And, I mean, he was really dominating. And their bullpen, they can do that to you, too. So it was one of those games, good pitching on both sides. You know, they got the key hit from Aoki there. So we didn't, not much offense, really. But Paxton was that good.
John, you touched on it there, but did you see like Marco was maybe a little bit uncomfortable in the first inning? Seemed like a couple times he was fidgeting, trying to get loose, and then looked like maybe he got looser and then he kind of locked in a bit?
Yeah, you know, I don't know. He's always gyrating out there a little bit anyway, so, you know, I mean, it's just kind of what he does. But, it's been a while since he's been out on the mound. But, you know, I mean, when you look at the gun readings, everything was where you wanted it to be. And, did a nice job, and he really did what he does best in that last inning. You know, he's in a jam, and he can work out of those jams with the best of them that you'll ever see. So,
the conversation you had there with Everett in the sixth, I believe it was, with Josh, seems that Josh said one thing, and then Everett kept coming back at him. Was that what was the conversation you had with him there?
What did I had with him? No, I was just going to see what was going on. You know, and they got back to work, and then Josh hit the double. So. You know, two competitive guys. You know that. You know, Josh is a very intense guy, and so is Mike. So, but it worked its way out.
And that was very diplomatic by John Gibbons, but it's incredible to me that he would describe an umpire as competitive. Two competitive guys. Well, the umpires aren't competing. Certainly not competing against the players, but. Maybe the fact that we accept that, two competitive guys, Mike Everett against Josh Donaldson. Josh Donaldson's the only one who's competing in the game, though. The umpire's trying to call balls and strikes properly. But just, and I'm not saying that John Gibbons used the wrong word, I'm saying that it's wrong that that's sort of accepted in the world of Major League Baseball, that, hey, you know, it's a competitive umpire. So weird. Blue Jays lose 2-1, and I don't want to pound on the umps, but that was awful by Mike Everett in two situations. First, escalating the disagreement with Josh Donaldson in the sixth inning, and second, a ball call on a 2-1 pitch to Michael Saunders with runners at first and second and two out in the bottom of the ninth in a one-run game, a pitch that was 5.5 inches below the strike zone. Called strike two. Saunders struck out on the next pitch, and the game was over. Blue Jays lose it 2-1. That said, Blue Jays got only 4 hits tonight. This is Blue Jays Talk. We're taking your calls. Let's go to Bob in Milton. Hey, Bob.
Just one of your thoughts on Donaldson's hit. Why didn't Rivera challenge that throw to home?
In the sixth inning on the Donaldson double with Josh Tolley?
Yeah, bottom of six there, I think it was.
Throw
was halfway up the line. He had his hands up. You know, he wasn't even going to think about throwing or sending him.
No, because he would have been out by 50 feet with a half decent throw.
Yeah,
that would have been an awful send. Any third base coach who sends Josh Tolley there should be fired on the spot.
Down one out. You're not even going to challenge it. The throw was halfway up the line.
Down one, two out. The Major League RBI leader and one of your hottest hitters coming to the plate, a very slow base runner, and a throw in that was at the cutoff man as Josh Donaldson was approaching third base. No one knew that the cutoff man was going to make a brutal throw.
Yeah, he didn't even round it, though. He didn't even come around hard. He had his hands up well before. I mean, if he's going hard, if he's coming around that bag, he's going to see that throw's halfway at the line. Even on that pass ball, there was still so much time. He could have, if he came around that bag hard, he still could have got there.
I don't think so. But I agree with you that, I mean, it would have been nice to see him round the bag hard. But Luis Rivera was holding him, and he should have been holding him. And I think he might have been I don't know, a little out of gas at that point. He was certainly running his hardest and not going very fast. Josh Tolley's not a fast base runner.
No, you can see that, and obviously everybody knows that. I thought there was
right.
one out on the play, but...
But even if he run, well, if there's one out, there's even less reason to send him. But if there's two out and a crappy hitter coming up, then maybe you take that chance. But with the Edwin Encarnacion coming up, there's no chance. I mean, again, a half-decent throw from the shortstop, and he's out by 40 or 50 feet.
Yeah, it would have been nicer to see him come around that bag aggressive.
Still isn't scoring.
He's still not scoring.
He's still not scoring.
He comes hard and he sees that pass ball. He's got a shot at it.
Yeah, he's got a shot and he's probably out. He's still not scoring.
Or he's safe and it's a tie ball game.
Or he what?
Or he's safe on it and it's a tie ball game.
He did stay.
No, or he's safe on it.
No,
on
he's
play at home.
There's a far greater chance that he's out than he's not.
Yeah.
And with Edwin Encarnacion coming to the plate. It's just, I mean, to put it nicely, counterintuitive to send Josh Tolley there. I mean, I get it. They lost by a run, and it was a guy that was held at third base, but he was held at third base because he would have been meat cake. It wasn't close. I appreciate the call, Bob. I appreciate that we all would have wanted Josh Tolley to score. And most other Blue Jays base runners would score on that play. Tolley and maybe Smoke are the only ones who don't. But Tolley was the one who was on. Kyle is in Napanee. Hey, Kyle.
Hey, how are you, Mike?
I'm all right.
I know you've touched on it a couple times, but I just want, like, what is there able to do about the umpires? Because you're right, it is the fox looking after the chicken hen, like, there's no way around it. There's got to be a third separate entity that's able to go in and judge these things, no?
Yeah, but no, there isn't. I mean, there is one that should
like
be able to, sure. We've got so much data now that it would be great to have an independent body taking care of that and supervising umpires and grading them and having umpires move up and down based on their merits, but we're not there yet.
I mean, even the IOC is having trouble with their people that they trust.
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
even the IOC, that hallmark of integrity, the IOC.
But it's still the world leading. Like, I mean, so is baseball. They're the world leading. Like, you're going to have corrupt people within your organization. And
I don't think, but yeah, but
being shown, no.
But I think that there is actual legitimate, honest to goodness corruption in the IOC. I don't think it's happening that way in baseball.
But they sent in a third party to just figure it all out.
Who did?
That's the IOC.
Yeah, they had WADA, and there's
exactly.
problems with that
like,
too.
Why we need this? No.
It'd be nice, but again, Major League Baseball isn't the IOC. They're their own little private thing, and it's not an international event and all that stuff. It's I don't like the comparison, but regardless, they could set it up with a third party. Umpires could actually be disciplined. Look, you don't want to cut their legs out from underneath them.
No, you don't. They've been around forever, and you don't want robots taking over. I know how much
I do.
You like that, but I know.
I totally do.
The game's all about the love of human error, but I mean,
no,
four
it's
and a
not.
Half, 5.5 inches. Oh, not everybody's perfect, just like you said.
But it's the players, not the umpires.
They miss seven times.
Well, but wait a minute. Yeah, but that's the players who are actually competing in the game, not the umpires. How
but
can
they're
you?
They're athletes too. Nobody's
no, they're
perfect.
Not. Oh, come on. They're not athletes, too. They're not playing in the game. They are supposed to be the ones who just kind of control things and who make the decisions. But their decisions and their human error should not determine who wins and loses a game. Like, how can you say human error is okay, but 5.5 inches off the plate? No, that's...
But that's not human error.
Of course it is. He didn't do it on purpose.
Okay, and all the umpires in last year's like divisional series wasn't on purpose either, right?
No, it wasn't on purpose.
Oh,
you got to take off the tinfoil hat
for all Canadian sports.
Come on,
I don't know. Okay, I guess we'll agree to disagree, but there's got to be a third party to be able to come in and judge this stuff.
I agree with you there.
Yeah, that sounds good. Okay,
all right. Thank you, Kyle. I appreciate it. I don't love this whole culture of agreeing to disagree when one of the parties is completely wrong, and it reminds me of what's going on south of the border now with the RNC and the Democratic Convention next week. You're agreeing to disagree, but one person is just not right. There's no conspiracy. If there was a conspiracy, the Blue Jays would never have been allowed to come back from 8 games out with 2 months left last year and win the AL East. We would not have World Series banners here. There's no conspiracy to prevent the Blue Jays or prevent the Raptors or prevent the Maple Leafs from winning. Umpires are human, and they screw up, and they screw up all the time. And that's okay as long as you're willing to accept that. I don't think you need to, because I think that we have the technology to see that they don't anymore. Milos Raonic lost the Wimbledon final because the ATP doesn't want a Canadian winning Wimbledon. Mike is in Ottawa. Hey, Mike.
Appreciate it. For a change of pace, Mike, I thought I'd talk about Edwin Encarnacion tonight. One of my favorite players on the team. Still hasn't got a contract from Shapiro and Atkins, and I'm starting to get a little bit nervous because it's obvious that they're not going to go after Jose. And if they don't get Edwin, that's going to be another potential 80 home runs off of the team for next year. I'm starting to worry about these guys, too. If we look at their record since the end of last season, they signed all the guys back that they should have, but there's no $100 million-plus contracts in that list. And I'm wondering, Mike, do you think that the money is there for them, or they can go to Rogers to get Edwin? Do you think that can still happen before the end of the season?
It's not happening before the end of the season.
But what
makes you think it's up to them?
Well, I say it's up to Rogers.
Yeah, but what makes you think it's up to Rogers or Mark Shapiro?
Well, aren't they in charge of the team? Don't they make the decisions? Don't they offer the contracts?
But isn't Edwin Encarnacion a free agent in 2 months?
He is. That's why you want to get it done now.
Right. So what's his incentive to do it now?
Well, it's not his incentive. It would be the team's incentive. It's sending a message to the fans. Thank you for coming out with record numbers.
Why would Edwin sign the contract?
Well,
he's 2 months away from free agency. He can go out on the market, and somebody might be dumb enough or might be desperate enough, maybe is a better word, to offer him 5 years and $100 million or $120 million.
I don't buy that, Mike. His legacy really, much like Jose's, regardless of what some people think, is with the Blue Jays. Their main success, everything has come with the Blue Jays, and they've done well for the team.
Right.
And I know what you're saying. You're saying, oh, why not wait till the end of the year?
No, I'm not saying that at all. Why not wait till the end of the year?
I'm
saying that Edwin Encarnacion is, first of all, I hate the fact that we're even talking about this because this is a team that's a game and a half out of first place right now, and we should be enjoying that. And, you know, if you turn the clock back 25 years, there were no calls to Blue Jays talk in 1992 when Danny Shulman was the host and Bob McCowan was the host. Nobody called and said, man, we got to sign Dave Winfield. What are we going to do? Jimmy Key's a free agent at the end of the season. What are we going to do?
We can't talk about two things at the same time, Mike?
No, because you're getting so obsessed with worrying about something over which nobody has any control over that you know how often people call in to talk about that when this is a team that's in the heart of a pennant race? But anyway, off to the second part of the point, which is that if I was Edwin Encarnacion's agent, I would be advising my client to say, look, you're going to market. It's already almost August. You're this close. Who knows what's going to happen? You're going to market. I think you have sort of a skewed view of the way the business works, and that's okay because it's a perspective that a fan should have. The fan should want the players to want to stay, the stars to want to stick around and want to be here. But it's not as simple as Mark Shapiro going to Edwin Encarnacion and saying, okay, Edwin, here's the deal. We're going to give you a 3-year deal plus an option for a fourth for $84 million total.
Okay.
If the option vests, what do you say? It's up to Edwin.
Okay, I'm just saying, Mike, that if I was the GM, and I know you enjoy that prospect, if I'm the GM of the team,
yeah,
I would I would right now, I'd kind of put in what we call like a preemptive strike.
Yeah, but how do you know that hasn't happened?
Well, we do know that hasn't happened
because Edmund said he's not negotiating.
You never know what his management team might, because they don't come out and say it.
No, nor should they.
Well,
although
not?
Edwin has come out and said he's not negotiating during the season, and he's very happy about that.
That's kind of a game, Mike. Everybody's going to say that to cover themselves and this and that, but you know behind the scenes there's probably some negotiation going on.
No, I believe there's none.
There's none?
Yeah.
This is bear with me with this one point, Mike. I just don't see how they can lose Jose Bautista, Edwin Encarnacion on the same season.
Very easily. They're both free agents. They have no control. None. Zero.
Let me ask you one last thing, Mike.
Yep.
Do you see them signing Edwin?
Honestly, I don't, but I have no idea. I mean, who knows what Edwin, you know, if Edwin stays healthy this year and has another great year like he did last year when he was healthy again, maybe that shows that, hey, this isn't a bad body guy who's going to break down so fast and he's worth keeping around. But there's no way the Blue Jays offer him a 5-year deal, and I think the Red Sox might and the Yankees might. So I don't know. Honestly, I don't see Edwin Encarnacion coming back, but would love to have him back. I just don't think that they're going to come together on term and money, but we'll see. Again, it's complete and utter speculation on my end, and I don't want to turn this show into a they have to bring Edwin back show.
Well, I think they do.
I know you do, and I know a lot of fans do,
but I think you
think they have a lot more control over it than they actually do.
Thanks for your input, Mike. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Appreciate the call, Mike. Appreciate all your calls, and we will continue to take them on our flagship station, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, and on sportsnet.ca/590. We're going to let the network go at the bottom of the hour. Blue Jays fall 2-1 to the Seattle Mariners. The Orioles won and the Red Sox lost, which means Baltimore and Boston have flip-flopped at the top of the AL East, and the Jays are actually now 2 games back of the Baltimore Orioles for first place. The Red Sox are half a game back of the Orioles for first place. Post-game show is brought to you by your Ontario Honda dealers. It's the Sportsnet Radio Network. That's going to do it for us as far as the network is concerned here at Rogers Centre. The Blue Jays fall 2-1 to the Seattle Mariners. James Paxton from Ladner, BC, is just terrific. 7 innings of 3-hitter. He allows only 1 run. Michael Saunders, Josh Donaldson, and Troy Tulowitzki, the only ones to hit a fair ball out of the infield against him over his 7 innings. Marco Estrada, in his return from the DL after 3 weeks, was pretty good too. Gave up 2 runs on 7 hits through 6 innings. Seth Smith with a tie-breaking RBI double in the top of the 5th to score what proved to be the winning run. The Boston Red Sox lost 2-1 to the Minnesota Twins as David Ortiz, with the bases loaded and nobody out in the bottom of the 9th, grounded into a 4-2-3 double play. And the Baltimore Orioles were 5-1 winners over the Cleveland Indians, so the Orioles are back in first place in the AL East by half a game over Boston and by 2 over your Toronto Blue Jays. The Jays continue the series tomorrow afternoon. We are on the air at 12:30 p.m. Eastern. It is a 107 first pitch. The knuckleballist will go. It's R.A. Dickey. He's up against Seattle righty Hisashi Iwakuma. Remember, this is a podcast. You can subscribe to it on iTunes. Find us at Blue Jays Talk. This copyrighted broadcast is presented by authority of Rogers Blue Jays Baseball Partnership and may not be reproduced or retransmitted in any form. And the accounts and descriptions of this game may not be disseminated without the express written consent of Rogers Blue Jays Baseball Partnership or the Sportsnet Radio Network. We continue on our flagship station, Sportsnet 590, The Fan, and sportsnet.ca/590. And for Jerry Howarth, Joe Siddle, Tom Young, Ryan Clark, and Josh Goldberg, I'm Mike Wilner. Blue Jays Talk continues.
Saunders hits a fly ball deep to left center field. Long high drive. Martin back. He's at the fence. He looks up. There she goes. Home run number 17 for Michael Saunders. The Blue Jays are in flight. They've tied Seattle 1-1 here in the second inning.
Michael Saunders with his first ever at bat against the Seattle Mariners, the team that he grew up with. and he takes the lefty. James Paxton deep tied the game at one, and that was the only run the Blue Jays would score. They threatened in the sixth, and they threatened in the ninth, but they lose 2-1 to the Seattle Mariners. I'm Mike Wilner. This is Blue Jays Talk. We're taking your calls at 416-870-0590, *590 on the cell, and long distance, 1-888-666-0590, all the way to the top of the hour. Before we get back to the phones, though, let's hear from Michael Saunders. Here's what he had to say. Saunders went 1-for-4 with that home run. He also struck out to end the game with two on after taking a 2-1 pitch that was almost 6 inches below the strike zone. That was called a strike. Here's Saunders.
You managed to get to Paxton, but for the most part, he really did a good job tonight.
Yeah, I mean, he's always had a really good arm. He's always had really good stuff. And you know, I got to see him obviously when he first came up, and I thought he was going to be a special pitcher. And you know, tonight he was hitting his spots. You know, he was keeping us off balance. You know, he's left-handed arm that throws 100 miles an hour. You know, so he's got good stuff.
Take us through the home run at bat and what you were looking for.
Yeah, you know, I got ahead in the count, and you know, kind of saw everything. He started me off with a first pitch curveball. Showed me a few cutters and also showed me a few straight ones, and got into a 3-1 count, and I was, you know, looking for something hard out over the plate.
Michael, was there any extra emotion or anything that you felt facing Seattle there for the first time after all that you went through?
No, not really. It was something I was really looking forward to last year, obviously. Missed that opportunity, unfortunately, but, you know, I still have a lot of friends on that team that I stay in touch with, so I think that was the thing that you know, I guess I was most excited about playing them, was just seeing my old teammates and old friends. And but you know, as soon as the game starts, you step between the lines, it's, you know, you go out there and try to win. So at that point, it's just another game.
Do you have any special connection with Paxton, being that you're both Canadians and baseball Canada, that kind of thing?
Yeah, I mean, I think all Canadians in baseball, it's kind of like a little tight fraternity where you know, even if you don't really know the guy, you feel like you do. And you know, like I said earlier, Paxton was a teammate of mine for a few years, and we played in the BC PBL against each other out the Premier League out in BC. And you know, he's a you know, a good buddy of mine, and got to know him through the Mariners system, obviously. And never played with him on Baseball Canada, though. He's a couple years younger than me, but you know, maybe he'll get an opportunity to play the WBC coming up, hopefully, at least for Canadian fans.
The AB in the ninth, the called second strike is pretty difficult to deal with it. And at bat, in that situation, we're dealing with a guy with that kind of stuff. How do you kind of cope with a strike call like that?
Yeah, you know, I mean, it's a big count. You know, 2-1 goes to 2-2 or 3-1, and you know, I thought one thing and Mike thought the other. I'm not gonna, you know, go on about it, but you know, it definitely obviously changes the count, which changes the at-bat, you know, but at the end of the day, like, you can't, you know, sit there and mope about a call or whatever. You got to, you know, just bear down, and C-Shack made some good pitches and ended up striking me out.
Yeah, he did, but that 2-1 pitch was certainly not one of the good pitches that he made, and good for Michael Saunders for not getting fined. But, yeah, he said he saw one way and Mike Everett saw another, and the rest of the world pretty much saw it another way as well, and it does change account rather dramatically. All that said, the Blue Jays still managed to get only 4 hits and score just 1 run tonight. When you allow 2 runs, you should win. And James Paxton just had it going on. Back to the phones. Brady is in Toronto. Hello, Brady.
Hey, Mike. How are you?
I'm all right, thank you. Go ahead.
Question for you. If the Jays are looking to make an upgrade, what is the advantage to waiting until the deadline instead of doing it today?
There isn't one, and it's not that they're waiting. I mean, if the Blue Jays could upgrade tonight, I'm sure they would. I think it's the teams that are doing the supplying of these upgrades that are waiting. They want to wait. They want to get as much information as they can as far as where they are in the standings. They want other teams to get in races. They want teams to get desperate and make a better offer than they're making 9 days before the deadline.
But is there a chance that we could be more proactive with setting what that is instead of reactive to it?
How are they being reactive?
Well, depending on what everyone else is giving up for pitchers.
But they're not depending on what everyone else is giving up for pitchers. They're the Blue Jays aren't in charge of this process, right? It's the team, it's the sellers that are. They say, we want this, and they're going to ask for as much as they can possibly get. And either, you know, and often, at least at this point, right, 10 days before the deadline, it's rather distasteful what they're asking for. The Boston Red Sox gave up their best pitching prospect and one of the best in the game to get Drew Pomeranz, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, I guess you can get ahead of the pack by massively overpaying right now. You know, you make that offer that they can't refuse, that they can't say no to.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't seem to be the right way to go about doing things, right?
Yeah, I guess you're right. I guess it just always, I feel like we're always very reactive to the market instead of being proactive and just setting the tone and getting out there and getting it, getting that spark, right, the energy for the team.
But I don't know how you can be proactive unless you're willing to, offer up a massive overpay.
I'm not saying make a David Price move right now, that being reactive, but getting an extra Nate inning arm right now, creating a spark.
Well, they got Jason Grilly in May. That's about as proactive as it gets.
I guess.
He stabilized the entire bullpen. No one was making trades then, and they got a guy who's become a late inning, high leverage, dependable reliever. They're doing exactly what you wanted them to do.
I guess, but like, are you comfortable with Jason Grilly being the guy for the rest of the year?
The way he's pitched, why not? I mean, you'd love an upgrade, but again, you want them to be ahead. You want them to set the tone. That's exactly what they did in picking up Jason Grilly. And now, what big arm relievers have been traded since then? None.
Are you classifying him as a big arm reliever, though?
He throws in the mid-90s, and he strikes out a ton of people.
That's a hard-throwing reliever to me. Not a big arm. Not a big name.
I don't care about his name. Was Mark Lowe a big-name reliever?
He was well-known, at least. Not a 39-year-old.
Jason Grilly's better known than Mark Lowe.
Well, obviously, for what he did before. But I'm just saying, as a perspective, I'm just wondering if we could go out and do something now before the deadline early.
Sure.
Instead of waiting until but that's all I'm asking, right?
Yes. The answer is yes, but they would be overpaying.
Okay. Okay. That's fair.
Yeah.
That's fine. Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
All right. Thanks, Mike.
Thanks for the call. Yeah. If you want to make the move now, what you're doing is telling the team that you're trading with, or what the team you're trading with is asking you to do is saying, you have to make us an offer that's so good that we're willing to make this move now and not wait until teams get desperate closer to the deadline and potentially make a bad decision that works in our favor. And it generally doesn't work that way. The massive overpays tend not to be the right way to go. And it's not like this team is desperate for help right now. They have the second best record in the major leagues since like the middle of May. They were down by 7 in the division. Now they're down by 2. Things are going very well in Blue Jays land. They just happen to lose today. Rocky is in Markham. Hey, Rocky, you're next.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. This is what I got to say. All the Blue Jays fans out there, you do not trade Jose Bautista or any other player on the 25-man roster. You rather add than to subtract, because if you look at 2015, they added players to the main roster, and you know what? That helped them win the pennant, and you know they ended up going to the ALCS. And it's kind of absurd that you know people are saying they should trade Jose Bautista. You do not trade Jose Bautista. You let them play it out, and then worry about the offseason later. And they should worry about now, the 2016, because this team is capable to go far in the playoffs. I'm not sure how far would they go, but this team could win the AL East once again. And at this point, like I said earlier about Aaron Sanchez, I agree about him going to the pen. And with him going to the eighth inning and Osuna going to nine, I think it's going to be filthy good if that were to happen. And with the way it's going right now, I know the Blue Jays are scouting for a pitcher. Who they will end up getting, I'm not too sure. But all I can say is they should add rather than subtract players from the main roster.
Okay. Thank you. I hope that doesn't spur discussion of trading Jose Bautista, because no one had mentioned it yet tonight, and I was pretty happy about that. So I don't know why you felt that you had to call and rail against something that nobody had mentioned, at least tonight. I know there's way too much talk about it in general terms. But yes, you're right, 100% on everything. Blue Jays lose 2-1 to the Seattle Mariners. Mitchell is in Ajax. Hey, Mitchell.
Hi, how you doing?
Still good, thanks. Go ahead.
So I have a question, another one about Jose Bautista. But in your opinion, based off of his performance so thus far this year, would you sign him to the contract that he wants on his terms and money?
Or I don't know what he wants anymore.
Okay. Or would you be making an attempt to sign him, or would you let him walk or find a replacement through the farm system?
No, I'd absolutely make an attempt to re-sign him. I think Jose Bautista is a very important piece of this team, and I think he's still a very, very good Major League Baseball player. And you know, he still has a great eye. He gets on base. He was on pace to hit about 35 home runs when he got hurt, and it was a freak injury. So I don't think it's a sign of wear and tear or that his body is breaking down. I don't know what kind of term he wants. I don't know what kind of money he wants. I don't know what this year is going to do to change both what Bautista wants and what the market is willing to give him. But yeah, absolutely, I would make an attempt to re-sign him, and I think the Blue Jays will do that.
All right, if you were, let's say you were the general manager of the Blue Jays right now, how many years would you give him?
I don't know. I'm not making that decision right now. I'm making it in November.
Okay, fair enough.
I want to see what happens over the last 2 months of the season, and I want to see what happens in the playoffs, and I want to see what his market is.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, okay. Thanks for the call.
Okay. Thank you. I wish we weren't talking about that stuff so much, because I'm really enjoying this season and how well the Blue Jays are playing. And I've been doing this for 15 years, and this is like maybe the fourth time in those 15 years that the Blue Jays have had a legitimate chance of making the playoffs. It might be the third. And I don't think we enjoy that enough. But whatever, it's an hour and a half show, so lots of stuff's going to come up. Ben is in Seoul, South Korea. Hey, Ben.
Hey, how's it going there, Mike?
It's a good 2 Jays talks in a row for you, huh?
Oh, yeah. Beautiful Saturday morning here in Seoul, so it was nice to watch that game. Really tough, though, to lose another one-run game like that. But you know what? I wanted to talk about that Josh Tolley play that you talked earlier with that other caller about. I thought Rivera was right not to send them, but I think something was in Tolley's head. Do you remember the Tootland from last weekend when he kind of rounded third and then got caught in the rundown?
Yeah, but that was on a ground ball when he was at second base. Yeah. And he thought the ball had been overthrown, but it wasn't.
Right. So same situation. So he went in full stop at
not
third,
the same
right?
situation at all.
And what's that?
No, completely different situation. Like today was completely like you're talking about. I mean, I get how like you. I understand that you think it might have been in his head, but the last time that happened, he was at second base. There was a ground ball to third. He thought the ball had been thrown away. And so he tried to score, and he was, again, meat cake, because the first baseman had actually caught the ball, Yonder Alonso, I believe it was, in Oakland. Today, he was at first base with two out. There was a double into the gap, and he was on his horse trying to score, and he got held at third. So I don't see a relationship between the two at all.
I guess I just wanted to bring up that play from last time, because that you know, my favorite sabermetric stat is the Tootland thrown out on the base pass, like a nincompoop is the acronym. But he did the right thing there today.
Yes, I
agree with you.
All right, thank you. Congratulations from calling all the way to South Korea just so that you could say Tootland on the air. Leon is in Mount Forest. Hey, Leon.
How are you, Mike?
All right, thank you.
Hey, I was going to ask you a simple question. I'm not the smartest baseball guy. I just have a question, and you said, just as I got on the air, I heard you saying that you didn't want to talk about this. the one thing I wondered is, a lot of people talk like they're so sure that Bautista's going to want something that we can't or won't offer.
Right.
And this is just totally a question that I'm curious about and wondering. If we're so sure that we are not going to be able to keep him, and you're probably going to tell me I'm wrong on that, but...
Well, you never know, but, yeah.
Why wouldn't... what would happen or why... Like, at the end of the season, if he's a free agent, we either re-sign him or he walks away and we get nothing. Like, my question is...
Get a first-round pick, not nothing.
Oh, okay. The other thing, I tried to call in three different times throughout this season to ask you one question. I never managed to get through, so I'll ask it now. It's not quite relevant as much as it was at the beginning of the season, but I'm still curious. When the whole talk was about leadoff man, Pilar, or somebody else.
Yep.
You have all these amazing stats. Do you know the statistics on how many more times a leadoff hitter actually leads off than anyone else, because the leadoff man could only lead off once in a game, correct?
Right. I don't have that.
I know there was one game after Pilar was no longer in the leadoff position that he led off three times. Three different innings he was the leadoff man, but he was no longer in the leadoff position.
Right. Yeah, that happened almost right away.
If that's possible, a stat that'd be possible to figure out.
I'm sure it's possible to figure out, but I'm sure it's quite variable. If you do the hard research, I'm sure you'd be able to find out the average number of times that the leadoff man leads off an inning. It is probably, I don't know. I mean, you're guaranteed one, right? So it's probably somewhere in the neighborhood of 22 or 23% of the time. Because you're guaranteed that one.
I worked too late to get into the Blue Jays talk, and there was three different times I got in, was on hold when Blue Jays talk came to an end. At the beginning of the season, I wanted to ask that. So when you said you don't want to talk about Bautista being traded, I thought, well, it's not really relevant anymore, but I'll still ask it.
Well, I appreciate it. I hope you like the answer. For me, the whole leadoff thing isn't about leading off an inning, though. It's about coming to the plate more often or... It's about getting at least as many at-bats as everybody else on the team.
But if that's what you're wanting, is high on base percentage that important? Or if you're just like, don't you want your best hitter at the top then?
Yes.
If you're going for the best or the most at-bats?
Pretty much. Yeah, that's why I like Jose Bautista leading off.
Is the highest on base percentage always your best batter?
No, but it's the guy who's the best at not getting out.
True. Anyhow, Mike, thanks for taking my call. I really love listening to you when I'm on my way home from the city in the truck. I just enjoy it immensely. So you have yourself a great night.
I appreciate that. Thank you very much. Blue Jays lose it 10-1 to 2-1. Sorry, 2-1 to the Seattle Mariners behind a great performance by James Paxton of Ladner, British Columbia. Adam is in Shelburne. Hey, Adam.
Hey, Mike. How's it going?
Still good. Go ahead.
Yeah, I figured. I was just calling. Basically, I wanted to, relay what you've been saying. I love this team. I'm a flex pack holder. I've been to many games this year. I have tickets for Sunday's game coming up on Flyers Bobblehead Day. And I was saying to your producer, the guy that takes the calls, that I like this team now, and I'm all for adding if it makes us better, but not if subtracting makes it worse, I think this team's good enough the way they are if everybody performs the way they can. And, I'm looking forward to the playoffs. I think we're going to be there. I mean, if this keeps up, even...
Yeah, there's not going to be any subtracting.
Yeah, well, that's what I mean. Like, there's, but even giving up anything too big for something, it's just not worth it.
It depends on what you're giving up and who you're giving it up for. Well, right? Too big should never, like, the consideration shouldn't necessarily be what you give up. It should be what you get.
In return, yeah.
Yeah. So, like, you might give up something that's really, really big, but you get back something that's really, really big.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm saying. If you can get something that's worth it, but I'm saying don't make a trade if there's just to make one, basically.
Well, why would you do that, though?
I don't think they're going to be like that, you know? Like, from looking at Shapiro's team in Cleveland that he left behind, I mean, they're a pretty good team now, right?
Yep.
They got a lot of young talent and a great pitching staff. So, you know, I like him being here, and I'm looking forward to seeing what he can do, too. I just want to give a shout-out to my nephew. His Barry Red Sox won a baseball tournament last weekend. He's a great player.
All right. Way to go, Barry Red Sox. Bad team name, but congratulations on winning the tournament. Thanks for the call, Adam. And yeah, I mean, I think it should be painfully obvious. Don't make a trade that makes your team worse. Mark Shapiro and Ross Atkins are trying to win a championship, as are the 25 guys on the field and all the coaching staff and everything. Blue Jays do lose today 2-1, and you know what? They're probably going to lose another 25 times over the course of the season at least. But this is a very, very, very good team. I think we got time for one more call. Sam is in Toronto. Hello, Sam.
How you doing, Mike?
Doing okay. Go ahead.
I have a question about Martin and Dickey. When does Martin start catching for Dickey with the postseason coming up shortly?
He doesn't.
At all?
Nope.
At any point in time this season? So in.
I don't believe he'll catch R.A. Dickey at all during the regular season. You still there? Oh, he left. I've stunned you into silence. I get what you're asking, that Russ Martin should catch R.A. Dickey in the playoffs, and so shouldn't he start to get some practice during the regular season? But I believe that they don't want to beat him up. That plain and simple, they just don't want to beat him up. And last year, Russ Martin catching R.A. Dickey got beat up a lot. And he had the thumb thing, and he had a wrist thing, and he had a hand thing, and all that stuff. And most of it was as a result of being asked to catch R.A. Dickey. So he's shown he can do it. He will likely be asked to do it in the playoffs. Though depending on what starting pitcher the Blue Jays bring in, if they bring in a big-time starting pitcher at the deadline, then maybe that guy, along with Estrada, Happ, and Stroman, that's your playoff rotation. I mean, for me, R.A. Dickey has been terrific, especially last two-thirds of the season. So if he continues to do that, I would expect that he would start in the playoffs. But I believe Russ Martin will catch him, but I don't think we need to see Russ catch him during the regular season to prepare for that. Thank you for the call. Thank you for all the calls. Apologies to those of you to whom we could not get, but we got to go. We'll be back at 12:30 tomorrow afternoon for a 107 first pitch. It will be R.A. Dickey on the mound against Hisashi Iwakuma. Remember, you can subscribe to the podcast. Go to iTunes, look for Blue Jays Talk. Thanks for listening. We'll see you tomorrow.